Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we are talking around the issues of security in the world, because as time has gone on, we are experiencing more and more incidences of cyber attacks, especially as more and more people are working from home, accessing some of those sensitive enterprise systems from home. And you know, in places like South Africa, we know that from some of the reports that have come out, that South Africa has become quite a hotbed for people trying to, you know, gain access for people's personal information and for companies as well. So to discuss some of these issues, we are acknowledging, I didn't even know that there was a World Password Password Day, but it seems, you know, that's what that's what's actually going on. And we're going to be talking about the pros and cons and some of the ways in which people are thinking about a different way to approach the whole issue of passwords. So to help us to talk about all of this stuff, we are joined by Richard Archdeacon, who heads up Cisco's advisory CISO organization globally and in Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Russia. Cisco is said to be or regarded as the largest cybersecurity company in the world. Richard, greetings to you.
Good morning, Madeira. Good to speak to you.
No, thank you so much. Did we get that right? Because I think that's something we sort of take for granted sometimes, that Cisco is the largest cybersecurity company in the world.
Well, I think what's happened with Cisco over the last few years is there's been an enormous transformation and development of their security business. And they now have an enormous portfolio of solutions which they're offering to clients. And it certainly has been a big change that they've gone through. And yes, now I think that it would be true to say that we're probably one of the leading cybersecurity companies in the world at the moment.
And then, because of where we started the conversation, I think a natural question that perhaps our audience might be asking is, have we come to the end of the password as we know it? Is this it? Is the password dead?
I think that's a very good question. I think the answer would be not yet, but I think that we hopefully in the years to come, we will see it slowly disappear for any number of reasons. I think it always interests me when I look back on the password and its history. It was first developed really way back in the 1960s for use on mainframes. So when we think about it, we're using a concept, a tool that was developed almost 60 years ago. And in the computing world, that's a very, very long time ago. But we still are dependent upon it. And I remember reading that Bill Gates said at the RSA conference in about 2004, that in his opinion, the password wasn't fit for purpose. It was dead. It would die. Well, that's been about 16, 17 years. It's still around. But I think that we are now beginning to see ways in which the password will eventually disappear.
And when it comes to that, can you maybe lead us through some of the thinking around how people are thinking about passwords? Because I think, you know, just speaking from a consumer point of view, you know, we've seen the rise of things like, I guess, two-factor authentication, you know, biometrics with the fingerprints that we have on our phone. Some people are doing, you know, face scanning, you know, in addition to the normal password that we have. But on the enterprise side, what's been going on there?
Right. On the enterprise side, there's a beginning. People are beginning to put it on their roadmap as to what we will be doing going forward. And I'll come and talk about a few of the interesting points there. But if we just step back and we ask the question, why do we want to get rid of it? From a security point of view, a password is really a weak area in security. I think if you look at most of the figures, something like 80% of all breaches, and there's many different figures on this. Some people say 70, some say 80. But the vast majority of breaches that occur come because of weak or stolen passwords. Really, they are one of the big issues that in the security business we have to deal with. They're one of the biggest risks. So anything which mitigates that risk, which reduces that risk, is a good step forward. But at the same time, we have a huge number of passwords that we're always trying to remember and keep track of, because we have so many different applications, they all want a different password. So we have this problem where we have multiplying passwords that are a continual weakness. And from a practical operations point of view, I can remember this going back many years. Passwords were one of the biggest operational consumers of operational IT support. We always used to say that after a long weekend or after a summer holiday, the help desk would be suddenly hit with all of these password resets, and it could take up anywhere between 20 to 50% of their time. So operationally, consumes resources. Security, not the best form of security. And as I was saying earlier, it's an archaic form of defense that we've put in place. So that is why people are looking to try and remove the password as being critical. It will take time. It's not going to happen overnight, for reasons which I'll go into. But I think you mentioned a number of factors there which are coming about, which are helping us look at the end of the password. One is what we refer to as the ubiquity of the smartphone. Everybody has a smartphone now. And we found that something like 80% of all smartphones have biometrics enabled. So that's a step which is coming along the way, and biometrics are improving enormously. If we go back a few years, a colleague of mine always tells a story about how they spoofed the biometric requirements on a physical security lock device by just putting on what he called gummy bears, which are sticky sweets. You put them on and they were recognized as a fingerprint. So biometrics, 10 years ago weren't that good. But now look at how biometrics are working in some great ways in terms of how we use smartphones. And you can now go into a shop, be recognized by your face, and you don't even have to pay at the till. You get automatically billed for everything you take. So we're getting a huge advance in biometrics, which is coming on and has made it possible. So we have this situation where we've got this technology advance around biometrics, which now are becoming a viable alternative for us to look at within the security world. So we are getting there, and we're now in a situation where we can start to think about what we're going to be doing with passwords going forward. Most people I find are in the planning stage, the roadmap stage, and they're trying to work out what it'll have in terms of impact on users within the organization. So it's not a great big rush that's happening now. We're in the sit back and think about it stage before we take those first few steps forward.
I can definitely attest to, some of what you're saying, because I know that for our own company internally, periodically, all the passwords are reset, right? Internally, I know that the passwords are reset, but at the same time, depending on when you joined the organization, your own personal, access, gets changed, periodically. And I know that for the IT department gets inundated with lots of calls of people, trying to get into this or that. And, so I can definitely understand where things are coming from. And as you said, there's a sort of a thinking stage. So from a Cisco point of view, how are you guys thinking about that? Can you talk to us about, some of the thinking that you guys are having and maybe how the technology itself will be working?
I think one of our main priorities is to try and make the user experience as easy and as simple as possible. And we're focusing a lot on that as a general principle. Within security, you can always make things hard for users. That's easy. But then security doesn't work. So how do we make it as easy as possible for users? How do we make it a delight for them to use this solution? And within the world of passwordless, we are being able now to bring together two elements. One is better security and a better user experience. So if that for us is a really prime driver. How do you make it easier for the user? How do you make it more secure? So that's really what we're looking at trying to achieve. So what we're trying to do now is we're working on defining the positioning of what passwordless will mean for the user. It's a great buzzword, passwordless. Everybody's got it everywhere. If you could go to a security conference, you would see passwordless everywhere. But of course, we can't do that at the moment. But we also have to work out how we're going to work that into what are very, very complex environments, especially at the enterprise. many will have legacy systems. Many of them will be going through cloud migration programs. So it has to fit into that kind of environment. So you can't come in with a one size fits all, slap bang done. You have to think how you're going to transform it and change it over time. You've got to be practical about it. And that's the way I always look at how you're going to bring about that change. So we think about that a little bit more. You're getting the development of new technologies that are being rolled out, such as Windows Hello. That's great. That becomes one form of biometric check. But still, organizations are going to have multiple different devices. So we have to produce solutions which will enable an enterprise to use all of its different kind of device, endpoint devices that users have across those multiple platforms. We also have to look at how people can phase it out and how it will work with their current, especially the identity and access management systems, which they've often spent a lot of money investing in getting it right. You can't just rip and replace. You have to have something which works with all the other tools they've got. And one area that we're looking at is where, as a starting point, is where organizations have started to move to cloud applications. And they're using something which we call SSO, single sign-on, because that becomes a double win. If you have a quick passwordless authentication into your single sign-on environment, you then get access to multiple applications. So that practical aspect is one of the areas we're looking at. Because when, as a CISO, you try to implement this kind of solution, you're going to have to build relationships with many stakeholders to try and bring it in and make it work. Mm-hmm. So making sure that that is possible, feasible, and easy as possible to do is going to be one of our main priorities. And I'd just like to go back to that whole concept of the user experience as well. Some of the issues that are going to come up, and I found talking to CISOs, are around things like cultural issues, privacy issues. How do we get users comfortable about this new type of security? Because it's going down to the user making the security decision by using that biometric, by showing their face, by putting in their thumbprint or their fingerprint. So we're going to have to work with the user to make sure that the user is comfortable with this, that they're happy with it, that they're happy with privacy issues, that they're all ready to go on that before we start to roll it out. And that's before we start to think about audit and compliance and all of the processes we've got to change at the back end of our IT environment and how we sort of how we enroll people and how we take them off and that kind of activity, that sort of process. So there's a lot of work to be done around it. We realize that it's not a simple solution. It has to be thought through very carefully.
And when it comes to some of that thinking, how do you sort of see it evolving in terms of, I guess, geographies? Because I'm pretty sure that inside the thinking, you guys have to then consider, right, how you approach the different regions that as Cisco you guys are in, right? And as you said, the cultural factors, because, you know, in one part of the world, people might really be comfortable already with the idea of, you know, passwordless access and controls, whereas in other parts there might be an aversion. People are just used to saying, okay, we're doing passwords, you know, even if it takes our IT department, you know, 3 weeks to sort everyone out, this is what we know, this is, you know, where we are. So I can imagine that there is all of that, I guess, can I call it evangelizing? That sort of has to happen. That also has to happen on that end, and some education as well. So when it comes to, I guess, geographies, maybe you can talk to us about the geographies that you specifically have purview over.
Well, I think that the privacy issue is one you always have to be very sensitive about. And in various parts of Europe, for example, because users will immediately think about the privacy issue. So you just have to be a little bit careful about that. But I think one of the other drivers as well is the familiarity with that kind of technology, where people have been rapidly adopting the smartphone environment, the work from home environment. So I think that's often helps. One of the interesting comments I got back from a services organization, CISO, which was quite interesting, was that the CISO said their users would love it, but they want to make sure that their users actually have some kind of security action when they they log into their systems. In other words, entering a password was actually a good thing because it made users think about security. So we're getting these different kinds of views that, that people will be wanting to encompass in such a solution. I think we have to look at the state of technology refresh as well. At what stage are organizations and different environments refreshing their technologies so that they've got the latest devices? So it'll probably, I think, linking with device refresh as well to make sure they've got the latest Windows Hello kind of device for facial recognition. That's the kind of driver that will come in as well. So there's multiple different drivers that we have to think about at all times. But again, culture, education, retraining are going to be very much an important part of it.
Has there been any type of, perhaps research or assessment? Because I'm just trying to come back to something that you said earlier on, because I think when trying to evangelize for some of these things, people will say that the investment in trying to get rid of passwords might be too heavy, or trying to change our systems, etc. So when it comes to that, has there been any assessment on what the economic considerations are of keeping passwords? Because you made some clear examples of, IT resources, being used to do something that could be so simple, right? But you're sorting out people's passwords and access and all of that. Yet if you had a better system in place, you could save, that resource to do maybe higher order things, right? So has there been any, type of assessment just around the type of leakage or wastage that's actually happening by keeping passwords around?
I think in terms of the economic impact, you can have a look at those that point that we've discussed around the amount of money that you could save on operations. But I think that one of the other aspects you've got to look at is how will this reduce the exposure you have to potential breaches. And that, I think, is one of the biggest factors, one of the biggest economic drivers for it. And that organizations will have that on their risk register that they can look at. Because if you think about it, a password which you type in and this gets stored somewhere else, if it's a third party organization, they're holding your password, are they secure? All of these issues which are high risk, you start to reduce. So I think it's the risk discussion that we have to have. The other discussion we have to have as well is about user expectation. At the moment, people expect to use passwords, don't they? That's what they've been brought up on. But what happens in the next 2 to 3 years' time when they're more familiar with using their iPhone or whatever, and they want to have that kind of access to enterprise applications? And that will be the expectation from the user. So I think organizations will be driven towards making life as easy as possible for the user. And so that will become another driver. How do you get the best staff? How do you keep your staff happy? One of the best use cases I've ever come across for passwordless was when I was talking to the CEO of a mining company, and he just said to me, when are we going to get rid of all these passwords? I'm sick of them. So when the CEO says, I'm sick of passwords, can we get rid of them? That's your business case for doing it. It's the ease of use for people in their working life. And that I think, will be the important factor.
I appreciate the fact that you've been giving us, all of these different instances of feedback from the people that you are talking to, actual businesses, etc. Anything from the South African environment around this issue?
What we're finding within South Africa is that there's beginning to be some interest in passwordless. We're finding that organizations are in a state where they're beginning to do major cloud migrations, which will bring in what I was referring to earlier, the SSO issue. And that then gives them a nice launch pad to start to look at, a good use case launch pad to look at the potential for passwordless. I think one of the other drivers we're finding is that hardware refresh cycle. The expense of getting the new hardware so that they've got the facial recognition or whatever it is they need on the laptop and device that people are using. I think that those are some of the issues that are now being talked about and thought about as they as organizations in South Africa start to consider passwordless. I think as with many other parts of the world, I don't think it's an immediate top priority. I think it is making sure that they, you know, got this cloud migration going, that they've got the system stabilized, their remote working sorted out. Those have been the major priorities. I think we're all in a stop, draw breath and think stage now in security after the disruption of the last 12 months. And so I think it's now going into the roadmap planning stage.
You know, when you were talking, it's very clear to see where some of the bottlenecks are when it comes to passwords. And, you know, we've illustrated this, you know, throughout the conversation. But one of the things I'm, you know, curious about, and I don't think we've spent any time talking about it, is because on the user side and on the enterprise side, but, you know, for criminal actors, right? How are they getting access to, how are they commonly or typically getting access to people's passwords?
So if we look at the password, for many years, there have been several use environments or ways in which criminals can get hold of passwords. One is they buy them. You can go and buy them on the dark web. They've been doing this for many, many years. So professional password stealing gangs will sell them, just as they sell credit card data. So that's a long established way of getting hold of passwords. And because people have a habit of using the same password time and time again, they can use that password on different types of attack they launch. So if, for example, I went into a shopping site and I used the same password as I had for my work, and the shopping site was attacked and it had password stolen, it would then work on my work site. So this recycling of passwords is a well-established industry. There are also sort of what we call brute force attacks, where they just try to crack a password as by running through different forms of password to see if they get it right. It's just a bit like spinning the roulette wheel time and time again until you get the right number. And so there's different approaches that they take. And of course, there's the old problem of people using easy passwords, you know, 12345. It often comes up as being the most easily used password, and that's the one they'll start with. They'll obviously get in there. And that's why the password is not as effective as it could be.
As we round up this discussion, I've had opportunity to look at some of the plans or redesigns, you know, for office space at Cisco, right? And I know that, you know, Cisco has its own machines, like the desktops and, you know, boardrooms and, you know, all of that. And, you know, just going through that, just looking at some of those plans, I was just thinking that, you know, one could realistically, fine, I don't know whether I can say realistically, but maybe you can, you know, you poke holes in my little theory here, that if someone was to arrive at, let's say, an office building, and you've got either password access, or in a lot of buildings, at least here in Johannesburg, you have fingerprint access, right? If you have fingerprint access, and then you couple that with the cameras that are in the building, you do some facial recognition, would it not be realistic then that if I'm recognized at the entrance, right, as I walk through the environment, it knows who I am and where I am? If I have a meeting that is set for, let's say, 10 a.m. in a specific boardroom, it knows that the central system of the building may know that Mudiwa came, he came in through the door, and, you know, we've seen him going through the building. He has a meeting set for 10. And indeed, he did come in. He went through that entrance. And now he's, you know, in the room, right? So when I arrive into the room, I no longer need to be there, you know, fiddling around with my credentials, because the system knows that I'm there and I have a meeting set.
So I think that in the future, we will probably still want to have some form of control when you get onto a device to access applications, whether it's a meeting, whatever, because you'll have different rights and different accesses to different applications. So you might have to try and re-authenticate from time to time. So, for example, you might have the ability to look at the finance application, but not change it. You might have the right to look at the marketing application and change it. So you have those different rights. So I think we're always going to have some sort of granularity about access rights that will need us at some stage to have that kind of interface. That's just my view, my personal view of how that will pan out over the next few years. But I think we're still a long way before we get that facial recognition completely integrated into our security. So it's going to be a few years before password is based on that is so common across the organizations in the world that we don't have to think about passwords anymore. It's getting there, but we're at the start of a journey.
All right. So that's been it for today. I think just on a closing point, Richard, just any thoughts around what actually needs to happen or some of the next building blocks when it actually comes to, I guess, the gradual? Because you said at the beginning that there's still some time that we are going to be holding on to these passwords, but I guess some of the more actionable blocks or actions that people can take or will be taking to, you know, eventually get rid of the password.
I think now's the time for planning. We have to understand our work environment. We have to understand how our users might react to it. We have to understand how they might well use that biometric. Will it be on a phone? Will it be on their laptop? So just to understand those working practices. I think we then have to start to look at where we might want to apply it first as that use case to kick it all off, that first step. And then we can start to look at the solutions that might come in and the impact this will have on our processes that we will require to support them. Because we've always got to remember that security is about people, process, and technology. And we have to bring those all together in order to make sure that any of these security solutions work. So that's what I'd be doing if I was a CISO now. I'd be looking at how I could plan to bring this in.
All right. So that's been it. We were here talking to Richard Archdeacon, who heads up Cisco's advisory CISO organization globally and in Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Russia, giving us some insight into some of the vulnerabilities that are around passwords, how long we've been using them, why we use them, and how they may eventually be phased out or augmented with other ways of, you know, access and protection, because cybersecurity is an increasingly, you know, difficult thing to be talking about, but at least it's something that people are now talking about. So that's been it for today. One of the key takeaways from him, he's just saying that no, passwords are not yet dead. There's still some time before that happens. What's important at the moment is for organizations to be in a planning stage, understand your business and ways in which you can manage your access. Your access and rights controls and ways that you can think about getting rid of the bottleneck that can be created when it comes to passwords. So that's been it for today. Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Madiba.
This is Madiba's Take.
I'd say this is a somewhat unexpected conversation simply because cybersecurity is one of those things that we've spoken about quite a bit on this platform, you know, digital security, you know, all the privacy considerations. We've had lots of conversations, but I don't think we've ever gone as in depth around, you know, one specific issue, you know, like passwords. And I really like some of the, you know, practicalities that Richard gave around passwords and access through passwords, because it really does seem as if it is a weak link in the system when it comes to just looking at the type of bottlenecks that it does give out there. And I think, you know, beyond the practicalities and the password management systems and IT people that are inundated with password change requests and all of that stuff, the risk factors of what happens when criminal actors or nefarious actors get hold of a company's passwords or an individual's passwords, I think that's where the real issue is. So anything that can augment the issue of security, I think it would be a good thing, because he spoke a lot around using you know, in addition to passwords, using facial recognition, using biometrics like fingerprints and, you know, facial scanning, that type of thing. And I think all of that working in tandem does work in a good way to increase cybersecurity, because the more you sort of think about, you know, the race or the goal of getting rid of passwords, one wonders, do we really want to get rid of the password, or do we want to bolster or to make the password more robust by including other aspects inside it, just so that, you know, periodically you might not have to enter your password every day? Because I just think about it, because he used the example of phones quite a bit, and I know that on my personal phone I use a fingerprint to get into my phone, but every once in a while it will ask for the password, just you know to let you know that we are keeping a watch and we just want to make sure that it's still you using this device. And it makes you think, like the example that he gave, to say that in some cases keeping passwords actually helps people to keep thinking about their own security aspects. So definitely good on that end. It will be good to see the type of developments that happen over time, and where we will be perhaps this time next year, or in about 5 years time, when it comes to this issue of passwords. Because 10 years ago, you know, just having a simple let's say 4-digit code on your phone, you know, was said to be, you know, pretty good security, because back in the day with some of the feature phones, you just had to, you know, enter a small little thing. Let's say on a Nokia device, I remember, I think you pressed the little blue button and the star or a hash or whatever it was, and that unlocked the device. Then we moved on to these 4-digit pins, and then now we find ourselves in a situation where you can do facial recognition, you can do fingerprints, you know, and all of these things. He was talking about the Microsoft systems and what they are doing. So over time, it will be good to see where we are in the next decade when it comes to this issue of access. Very important, cybersecurity. It can be a big risk for companies and individuals. So anything that can help to bolster the security is a good thing and should be invested in. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, by hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.